People test your credibility. And how do you gain credibility? You say openly you're going to do something and you get it done.
Welcome to the Product Market Fit Show, brought to you by Mistral, a seed stage firm based in Canada. I'm Pablo. I'm a founder turned VC. My goal is to help early stage founders like you find product market fit. Today, we have Solon, the founder of Mindbridge. Mindbridge is a risk discovery platform that uses AI to help auditors do their jobs much more efficiently and effectively. They're based in Ottawa. They have 200 employees and have raised over $40 million. Solon, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks for having me, Pablo. Always a pleasure to see you. It's been a while.
Been a while for sure. So the topic of today's episode is how to build hype for your startup. And it's a little bit of a fuzzy concept, but everybody knows that there's just those startups out there that you see and everybody's talking about, everybody seems to be excited about, and maybe they have something very real, or maybe you just don't know what's really behind it. All you know is that it's really, really exciting. It's really, really hot. And it tends to, and people have different perspectives on this. Some people, you know, say you should just be heads down and don't worry about the hype. But let's face it, you know, hype helps. It helps you bring people along. It helps you land customers. It certainly helps you raise money. And Solon, you are the master hype machine, at least as far as I know. So I think it's amazing to have you here today. So that's really what we'll talk about. Got this kind of, you know, AI for fraud kind of idea, right? And you can't build it. Let's face it. You can't build it. And so as I understand it, your first step was to get people around the table that could help you start building it. Although maybe let me ask that actually. Was that the first step? Like, okay, let's go build it. Or did you also try and go sell it first? Like, how did you think about your first step?
Pre-sale. Look, man, I mean, an advice for everyone. I know this is controversial, but I do not abide by the lean startup strategy. I hate it, actually. I think it's an absolute disaster for ventures that everyone pigeonhole themselves in this. It's great for people that are first timers. I get it. It gives traction of that. But if you're someone that know where you're going to find customers, if you know the pain point, if you have domain expertise, or you're just very motivated to make it happen, think about this, like building something first on a handful of small customers, you will have, your pivot will be brutal, right? Like, whereas if you find five customers, man, like I basically had a full deck collaterals, webpage, value proposition, USP, like I was like selling with nothing behind but an InDesign page that was clickable and where I would tell all the enterprise buyers and buyers, this is what we plan to deliver in 6 months. And in my head, I'm like, okay, it's going to be 8 to 9, but you know, a bit of a...
There's the hype. Right? Like, there's the hype coming
No, that's not the hype. It's just like, you know, actually I learned this when I was in the Bay Area. I was like, I share a personal story, right? It's like, I remember, you know, I tried to be smart. I remember I was 23 or 22, fresh off a master's of management science in pretty good school in France after 1 year in the UK, thinking I'm smart. And I arrive in Silicon Valley, I arrive on the Sunday, I'm invited for brunch, and I thought everyone would be relaxed. It's Sunday. It was a board meeting. I didn't realize it was a board meeting, right, of the startup. And then I arrived there, and then I was great the whole time, and I tried to do something smart, and I tried to say, well, you know, I think the startup should, you know, be careful not to over promise and, you know, under deliver, which they should probably, you know, under promise and over deliver in their strategy. I tried to be smart, right? And I said that everyone explained laughing at the table. And then one of the guys turned around there, I think he was Israeli, some thick accent. He's like, he was Persian. Yeah. And he's like, hey, Frenchy boy, dude, do you see around you what's going on? Your competitor is overselling. Your neighbor is overselling, right? Everyone's overselling and they bust their ass to overdeliver behind it. If you're dumb enough to think that your little cute thing of like, you know, taking it slow of it to arrive slowly and softly, don't come here to play with us, right? I was like, whoa, welcome to Silicon Valley. it was like, this guy is a monster. It's like, he's telling me, you're going to go in. So there's a fine line between also what I call lying versus raising profile versus, you know, projecting your vision. And this is where most people completely misjudge me. I'm not saying that I was about to deliver. I'm saying I'm going to try to deliver. And this is the vision we think is unique in the world and nobody gets. And this is the help I need. Would you like to try to help me in making this a reality? Like you don't go and say, yeah, for sure we're going to deliver. It's like, no, This is what we this is our assumption of what could happen. And we're going to try within 6 months to make it happen. 6 months, I could have been more, could be less. It turned out to a long, longer than that, right? And then my friend, it could have been taken 6 months if I would have been able to secure one or two more engineer earlier stage, but that was not the plan. My plan was to de-riskify the market first. It costs nothing to change a PowerPoint and to say, I was an idiot. There's no market for this. Pack my bags, go home. You spend literally your time plus a license of Microsoft Office. You're done, right? It's like, it's a very low investment. I became a very simple capitalist, right? How much money do you spend to how much value you have and validation you have? So what do you want to do? Do you want to spend a year and a half in your basement building something and then show up in front of people and have 2/3 telling you no, and then you have to rewrite everything? In the meantime, you have salaries running. You're like, you know, everyone tight like that. Or do you want to spend 3 to 5 months testing the market, doing cold calling, emailing executive on LinkedIn, getting meetings as if the product's ready? And when you pitch them, it says, we understand you.
So walk me through like that first part, right? You're testing the market. You're promoting this big vision, you know, let's call it aggressive timelines that are still, you know, possible, but you know, who knows, yeah. But what are you trying to get out? Is it just people nodding their head? Is it a signature commitment. Of a pre-order? Yeah. Like, what does that look
commitment.
Like?
Commitment. So commitment, a verbal commitment, and it starts just with verbal. The moment. So where I started, so it's funny, you know, the guy, there's one guy in town that is a very unique character called Adrian, who was hearing me, he used to be my neighbor, and he will hear me talk about that idea obsessively every time we bumped into each other dropping our garbages. And at some point, he says like, dude, enough already. You know how to do it. What are you waiting for? And I was like, what is it? You lost your cojones? You're scared? What happened? It's like, he just went crazy on me. And I'm like, I was so upset. I came home. I was so upset. Like, how dare he talk to me like that? The next thing I did, I sit on my computer. I literally said like something, 150 LinkedIn invitations. 20 people reply, and I got my first meeting. And then I did that again, and then again. And all of a sudden, you're having 20 opportunities in the pipeline on the PowerPoint and InDesign mockup. And then I said, okay, I need to start hiring engineers.
Right. And so that was the validation for you, was just people saying, yeah, I would buy this for this amount.
Yeah.
Got it.
Oh, not just that. Not only people saying, that's interesting. That was the first stage, like the first 3 to 4 months. The second phase was commitment to the next level, which is people saying, and by the way, you said something earlier that I want to be very clear. I did not pitch a big vision to the first buyers. That's actually the key. Yes, to the price, to the investors, you have to. And ideally, don't educate your competition. Don't create your competition, right? Don't go right around TechCrunch, BetaKit, and things like that. Just like, get some traction first. And then to the buyers, though, you need to be to the micro level. And that's actually something Code also kind of mentored me on. It's like, you have to go to the micro level. Say, you guys work like this today. It's not going to be a great vision of things. Like, we're just going to take this. It's going to be effortless for you to rip out. It's going to save you a bit of money. And then you'll be able to do the same just with that one thing along the way. It was actually a very small incremental step for the buyers to envision accepting that new technique. You see what I mean? Don't think seriously when you're an early stage founder. You need to do everything at the same time. I don't want to hear excuses. You need to raise the profile organization. You need to fundraise, hire your first people, like, you know, go get the tax credit there. Like, everything at the same time, because otherwise you're blocking something. Like when you're at the early stage, right?
I think it was you that told me once, it's not this or that, it's this and that. And somebody had told you a story around that concept.
Yeah. It was actually a very successful CEO who told me, the key thing sometimes is not to think about should you do this or that, but should you just end that, right? It's like replace, like try to think about what it is if you replace that you try to do both, right? And the human mind is not trained to think like that naturally, right? Like we have only 1 hour, so we have to do that or that. So well, you have only 1 hour. How can you do this and that? So yeah, absolutely. So it's very important. And so by the time that there was the first phase, right? Which was like a bit raising profile. Second one, still raising profile, but now getting some soft commitment. By that time, because of all the noise I was making and people convinced that there is something there, I was already closing $300,000 of a seed round, right?
What is this noise? Like, tell me about, what is that? Is that just bumping into people and telling them about it? Is that what's happening there? What are the details there?
So for example, you infiltrate a network, right? And then you talk to a few stakeholders before you go pitch the next day about, yeah, and you go sit. So I did that. Sorry, I apologize in advance for people who recognize it. I go sit just behind the jury the day before the pitch, right?
Which pitch is this?
I mean, I don't want to disclose this in particular, but it was like basically a pitch fest with, you know, a lot. There was like, I don't know, like 1,500 people in the rooms, and there was like, I don't know, 60 or 50 startups that competed, and there was 5 spots or something like that, right? I was in day 2 and day 1. I went to sit nearby behind the jury, saw who were the jury, and then there was a day 1. There's one startup who killed it, like just did so good. It just so happened that they were not far from what I was doing, right? It's like it was not the same, but people could, you know, what the stuff was related to e-commerce. I was not e-commerce, but the I remember my pitch was very simple, and it could be confusing for both, right? So I just go there, and then I hear the jury is like, you know, after they will stand up, they go have coffee, and I talk. And I say, how are you doing? I say, good. I say, what are you doing? I say, well, you know, I'm from Canada. I say, what do you hear? I say, oh, I'm just like looking around, interested in innovation. Like, didn't say I'm a startup, right? And then all of a sudden he walks away, and then there was a girl that was like outside as more of an analyst type of person. And that was the person retaking all the notes. So I understood very quickly, one is the partner, one is the principal. I understood the game. So befriend the principal, and then also talk about like, and that person was not technical. So I just said like, so how do you evaluate startups that have like tangible plans to implement machine learning versus those that are just exploring? That's all I said, right? And then after that, like literally 30 minutes after I went to sit back, next startup goes on stage. That principal turns around towards the partner and starts saying, and the guest is like, so I don't understand your architecture here. How are you going to be tangibly implementing machine? And the bar got just raised for anyone that put machine learning, because he kept grinding everyone after that. The day after comes, I'm the first one to pitch. And I just raised and say, well, you know, I know the first day was difficult because you guys couldn't judge and gauge properly if there was real machine learning being put in motion here. So here's how architecture will look like and what we plan to implement. Like, this is PsyOps. Like you just put seeds, you erode, you draw the attention. There's a fine line not to cross. You don't want to do things that are lacking integrity or things, but it's war, man. You're there to compete. You're there to compete. Like, if I go to compete, I go to win. I'm not going to go to be second place. You go to be number one, right? Sorry for everyone that tried to compete with me, by the way. But the point is, PsyOps is a key portion of building a war machine, right? It's like you need to know the networks. You need to know the influencers. You need to know who's going to talk when. You need to know what matters. Never underestimate the spouses, ever. If ever you're invited to an event and then the husband or the wife or the decision maker is there, you better be on your best behavior. Like it's simple things like that, right? That build up. If you do consciously every day for months, it will expand the amount of people who know your name dramatically.
Got it. And to be clear, I mean, this was kind of one story at one event, but what you're doing is you're doing this all over the place. And it's a lot of networking, right? It's a lot of just talking to people and constantly a lot of energy about what you're building.
All the time. Look, it's simple, right? It's like, I still do it before COVID, I still do it sometimes. So I will do 2 dinners a night, right? I go for 2 dinners. I go for the first dinner, I will ask, do you mind if we have an early dinner? People that went through that email recognize it and insisted to be as early as possible to have dinner with them early, and I will have a salad, appetizer. I will have just a salad, leave probably a quarter or half of the salad on the table, right? And then go to the second dinner where we'll have the main. Everyone thought I was like super disciplined, right, about my weight. Right. I was like, no, I was having 2 dinner, right?
So let's go back to kind of these other stories. So now you've got this, you're generating hype, and as we've said, like we're doing everything at the same time, right? But you're generating hype, you're talking to a lot of people. You've got customers that are showing more and more interest. Now you do need to start building. You don't have, as far as I understand, any funding yet. And or the capabilities to believe.
We have at that time.
Even before you hired, before you brought somebody to start working, you already raised money?
No, it was the same time. So the first two hire was out of my pocket, with grants that matched it. So, and then a bit of debt, right? But very quickly, within 1 or 2 months after the first hire, closed the friend and family round of $300,000 and then continuously raised after that.
Okay, got it. Walk me through that round. Was that just people that knew you really well, or were there like kind of angel types that didn't necessarily know you? And how, again, that was really much idea stage So how did you raise that round?
Networking. I mean, just, I did not go for the most experienced, I did not go for the most traditional angel route and things because I didn't, like, I remember there was an angel group that had a lot of potential tracing angel and they gave me that form to fill. And in my head, I was like, I'm going to spend 45 minutes, you know, to fill that form. I'm going to make 10 phone calls. Guess which one I did? I made 10 phone calls. I saw the list of the people in there. There was only five that I wanted and five others. I just called them. It's like, just bypass the process of the whole thing, right? One of them ended up investing, right? I mean, I know I stepped on some feet and I know I've, you know, roughened some feathers because I had a really techno prisoner attitude to things. But the first five investors were a combination of things. They were founders that recognized that I was determined enough to make it happen. At this stage, they are investing on the guy. Is the guy competent enough, determined enough, crazy enough, whatever you call it, you know, obsessed enough to make it happen? And they also get a sense of the premise real or not, right? And so you had half founders, other founders. And that I think is very important. It's all credits to Code to have you involved, right? Like people that have, you know what I'm talking about. Once you've been in the trenches of doing the 0 to 1, you are, you know, you are like marked for life. Like you think that the stress it causes on you, what matters doesn't, understanding to make the difference between noise and signals. Like those things are super important. And at the early stages, the people that have been through that can recognize someone that is going through the same struggles, right? Someone that's struggling to get through, but he's had a conviction that transcends him because he's seen it, right? The other half were angel investors who were experienced enough to understand that there was much more than meet the eyes and they wanted to see where it goes, right?
So let me just go off on tangent here. Like one of the things I noticed talking to you always and even here today is like, you know, your personality is such that you have a lot of energy. You talk about things really passionately. And so I have a few kind of questions from there. A lot of founders aren't necessarily like that, right? And yet they still need to kind of build hype. How, you know, how do you think about, and you can't necessarily be who you're not, but what can you do to kind of, you know?
Amazing question, man. Amazing question. How can you play to your strengths? That's the question, essentially. If you're an introvert, you're not as social like that half French, half Brazilian like guy that is super social. You're actually someone that have much more of a mental peacefulness and is not always bursting of energy and emotions or in colors. Well, you play to your strength. I've been told many times that I have a very incredible capability to see the 10,000 feet view, the macro and the micro and the macro very quickly. I'm able to like go down to a detail and like nerd on it and at the same time see the big picture, right? And there's some people that actually rejoice and enjoy the small details. Well, guess what? Those people might do the same. They just need to take their time to map things out for them before an event, to just understand the levers, and they'll do it a different way. There's many different ways to raise the profile. So I really don't like the word hype because it's very negative. It's very collective and it prevents you from understanding what it is. All it is the question is, how can you raise the profile of what you do? Guess what? We have the best example in town here, right? Shopify started. And actually, you know what? Let me take a more recent example. The guys from Rewind. Like they were on Reddit. They had a Reddit forum where they asked questions, they asked people. And some people were interested. Shopify, he had like a page with like a sign up form. He was coding something in the corner and the community, his brethren of Ruby developers and web developers started paying attention. So the hype was built. The profile was raised in a community of people that are not socializing face to face. They were remote already, right? So there's many roads that lead to Rome, actually, right? It's like there's many ways you can raise the profile of your venture. It doesn't have to be with the crazy psyop networking attitude that I have. It can be through a bulletin board on Reddit. It can be through many things somewhere. It can be by sharing your code. I've seen that. I've seen a startup doing that very well, where they contribute continuously under the same account in an open source project. And guess what? When people come and try to implement it, they run into the problem that they solved, and then they charge them a subscription to provide management. And one of the most profitable startups I know, by the way. So there's many ways to raise the profile of the venture.
So really, the strategy is I need to raise the profile of my company, and then you figure out which network matters, which community matters, and how you penetrate that community. And maybe it's in person networking events. Maybe it's behind a computer screen on Reddit, whatever. But whatever is going to work for you and obviously playing to your strengths.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's one thing also. Again, I didn't know that when I started. I really learned. MindBridge has been a really transformative experience for me because of the speed, scale, and the success it got very quickly. And I think it's just in infancy in terms of success. You have to be authentic. At the end of the day, every time I tried not too long ago in the FF group. So FF is like a group of founders that meet regularly, and we had a meeting with six of us to talk about the problem. And lately, because MindBridge is getting more professional and more corporate, I had tried to hold back a bit on the crazy energy solo factor, right? And try to be someone that you can walk with every day and relax and peaceful. And I had that persona, and I arrived in the founders meeting and I talked the same way that I talk in another, meeting in a corporate way. And they all looked at me like that. And they're like, what's wrong with you today?
That's right.
It's like, they're like, come back here. Like, we want the real you, right? And so the marketplace and the founder and the same way that effect, like, people smell bullshit. Hype can be bullshit, right? Raising the profile of what you do, that's very serious. That's not bullshit, right? People, and by the way, once you build bullshit and people see it, you lost them forever. So whatever you do, it needs to come from a place from your heart, from authenticity, and for something that you can stand by. If you're not comfortable going to a networking event or a conference because you're a big introvert, don't put yourself in your position. You're going to look awkward, right? Whereas if you're very comfortable showing code that you built, do that. Record a Loom in your comfort of your home where you explain how you build this with a Loom where you talk over, you're alone, no one's looking at you, you feel more comfortable, and send that Loom, record a Loom video with a password to the one or two investors that you're seeking.
Perfect. So maybe let's, like, one more story that I'd like to just touch on is raising your kind of, I don't know, pre-seed round or seed round. I think it was just over $1 million.
Yeah.
It was still really early days, right? Can you walk us through how you did that? And I think it also was related to bringing Ellie on as CEO.
So as soon as things started picking up, so I had made a decision. I wanted to go fast. And I made the decision. I wanted to be first to market. I went to an event where there was a lot of investors in Silicon Valley. And because I was just getting started launching the product, I felt that it was not the right time to show a true card. I went to pitch in front of them. I barely said nothing about the venture. Some VCs were frustrated, saying, why are you on stage if you're not pitching properly? Why are you not disclosing what you're doing? And I said, if you're really interested, we can sit one-to-one. And I went to talk to them and things, right? But the reason why, there was a certain level, it's not my first startup, it's not my first rodeo. I had enough experience to understand that there's when you're a founder, you have that defect, which is your baby is beautiful. And I had seen a founder make that mistake, right? I had seen someone that owns his business preventing his own staff and team to do what was best for his own interest in the business because he had the assumption that only him can do it better because he's a founder. And by the way, you can read this article in Harvard Business Review. I invite every founder to read The Founder's Dilemma. You want to be king or you want to be rich? The data supports it. Founders do not always make the best CEOs. But the best founders and the ones you want to back and interested are the ones that either self-aware of it or the ones that have the capacity to learn to become it. And then you have a magic combo, right? But the reality is that I had decided early on that I wanted MindBridge to be as professionally managed as possible. Also, when you fundraise, it's very useful because they look, as you know, at the team slide. And so you're being judged on every factor. So it's very simple. I don't have a problem admitting it. Like, I took a very mercenary approach. I'll do what it takes to make it happen. This is the slide deck people want. They want to see market size, projection, blah, 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 blah. And they want the team and this and that. Well, I make sure that every side was the best possible. And I will only go pitch when I felt we were ready for that level of pitching with enough slides that were real. So, for example, how can you do that when you don't have sales? Well, it's simple. Because I came from the industry, I know how many buyers were there. I know how much money the competitors are making. So I could actually be super credible on the slides of the total addressable marketplace. But so what happened in the seed, so what was interesting is that I was starting to have momentum. In fact, one of my investors, you know him, Aiden, calls me one day and says, you have like those 25 logos you're talking to right now. Two of them are in the like closing stage. How many engineers you have again? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not having engineers right now. And he just froze. I said, oh, I'm not sure that's a good idea. You know, Aiden is like very polite. And then I said, look, I don't want to overinvest in engineering. We'll have to catch up. But that was probably a mistake. Should have done it earlier. But I remember at that time, there was like people, certain people started tracking me because I had done hype early on. There was a handful of seed investor VCs. They were starting to see me at one conference in Toronto, one in Montreal, see me in Ottawa making a lot of noise. And one of them, Real Venture, Sam, was a former, like you. He came from the trenches. He was a guy that was working in a successful startup that had all the scars of the battle and could smell when someone, you know, was onto something and was found interesting. But he was waiting that something else happened. And then all of a sudden, I come and we were starting to talk already. We were engaged. And all of a sudden, I announced that I'm bringing a CEO on board that done it before, that just had an exit. And all of a sudden, the conversation turned and accelerated, right? Because again, what it is you're just removing risk, right? It's like when you do those things, I call that the power moves that, by the way, most founders underestimate their power moves they can do. Most founders underestimate what they have in front of them and underestimate the possibilities they have in front of them. The number one thing that people look at you is like, how many milestones are you completing? Imagine Pablo, you talk to someone that has nothing. 2 months after it comes to you, I have 2 potential clients, 20 in the pipeline. I have 2 people hired. And by the way, I'm about to hire that CEO that just had an exit to SurveyMonkey. He's like, this guy knows how to get things done. That's how you build credibility. So the other aspect in that, one thing in that phase that was super important, and this is, you know, first one, PsyOps, get into the mind of people, get there. But then right away, be careful. People test your credibility. And how do you gain credibility? Is you say openly you're going to do something and you get it done.
Perfect. All right. Well, look, we'll stop it there, Solon. I really, really appreciate it. You know, maybe just to recap, we talked a lot. We started talking about hype, but really merged into this idea of raising the profile and why it's so important to raise the profile of your startup, to really find the network and the community that's going to matter and make sure everybody in that network, in that community looks at you and is interested in what you're doing, starts Absolutely. To follow the story. And then, of course, following that up with real results, building a trend. Yeah. And then it just becomes this irresistible kind of force that everybody is drawn to. So,
and it's magical. And it's magical when it's in motion, because you know what happened? Then you start having inbound. That's when you know that you did something right. You're not the one pushing the message out anymore. Also, you see emails like, I was having dinner with my friend. I think you should talk to him. He could invest in you. I was doing this and I talked to you. Oh, you received an invitation to speak at a conference that you did not apply for because they heard someone talking about you. That's when you know that it's working.
That's the virality. And that's where the broken telephone analogy, which you spoke about. So, so thanks a lot, Solon. I mean, I think this was great. And I think founders will learn a lot from the stories you shared today.
No, it was useful and not too controversial. I'll hear from my HR if it was.
Thank you so much for listening all the way through. It's been a pleasure having you here. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode.